Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, to yet another triumphant edition of the Assembly Call IU Post Game Show. I am your host, Jared Morris from Midwest Sports Fan, and we are here for the next, 60 minutes, 75 minutes, we'll see, to celebrate another IU victory. The Hoosiers tonight defeated Gardner-Webb in Assembly Hall. The final score was 73-49. And we have a very special show for you tonight. Not only is Ryan Phillips from Rumors of Rants going to join me as usual, along with Andy Bottoms of the Bottoms Line, who will be calling in a little bit later, but we also have Alex Bozich of InsideTheHall.com, who will be joining us to lend his perspective on the Hoosiers here in a little bit. And, of course, we want to get your calls. The guest call-in line is 323-843-6016. Give us a call. Get on the show. Talk about the Hoosiers. And, of course, we will start out tonight's show as we always do. I will give my banner moment. Ryan will have his rant, and then we'll get into your call. So when you look at tonight's game, my banner moment, of course, my banner moment is the moment during every IU game when I look at this team and think that we are building a championship team again, because that's the goal. That's what we all want here. And for me tonight, it was the start of the second half. The Hoosiers went into the half leading 34-23. They had started out really, really well, I thought. Played really well the first 4 to 8 minutes in that first half. You know, kind of played with their feet stuck in the mud a little bit, almost like they were looking towards Thanksgiving for those final 12 minutes. But to start out the second half, I thought the guys really came and played well. And the moment for me was Victor Oladipo threw a bad pass, and Tom Crean took him out of the game. And as soon as Oladipo re-entered the game, his energy was completely different. I thought he started out the game well, coasted for those final 12 minutes of the first half, and then as soon as Coach Crean took him out, Oladipo came back in with a purpose. And he really started to play well. He made some plays that really keyed that run. He got a bucket. He got a steal. He had a good pass. And his energy was infectious. And he, along with Zeller, were the two guys that really helped us push that lead up. And to me, what that showed was that I feel like Coach Crean has a better finger on the pulse of this year's team. You know, last year it felt like we would come out in the second half after playing some good first half and not really respond. And not really play well at the start of the second half. And this year, a theme that we're seeing is the Hoosiers coming out in the second half and playing well. And it's nice to see a guy like Oladipo, who is supposed to be one of this team's leaders, certainly has been from a scoring and energy standpoint so far this year, to see him deal with getting pulled from the game, come out, be mature about it, be refocused, re-energized, and really, really play well. And to me, that was my banner moment because it really showed something that is different about this year's team than we've seen from past year's teams. And with that said, I am going to bring in Ryan Phillips. You know him from Rumors and Rants. And, of course, he does Ryan's Rant every episode of the Assembly Call. And I'm going to bring Ryan in now to give you his rant on this latest IU victory.
Thanks, Jared. I think that, as you said, that beginning of the second half was really important. For me, what I'm ranting on is going to be my first negative one. And it's going to be shot selection, especially in the first half. I think that, especially in the half-court offense, we were just – there were a couple times where Oladipo obviously showed that he could go right by his guy with no problem and get to the hoop. And he just there was one where he shot a flat-footed three-pointer. There's another where he tried to pull up, and that's just not where we want him shooting the ball. He's got to get to the hoop. I mean, if he's hitting a jumper off of a reversal or something like that, that's one thing. But you know, we're not. He's not the kind of guy who can catch the ball, stand there for a few seconds, and then just flat-footed hit a three-pointer. And I thought Watford had some bad shots as well. I think that this team, like you said, they were sort of cruising for a bit in that game, and that's just not going to fly later in the season. And I think they picked it up in the second half, got some energy. I think Will Sheehy was a big-time factor when he had that stretch of scoring 10 points in a row on his own. And but I thought that as far as the half-court offense went, I thought they forced a lot of shots. We ended up shooting 49.2%, which is obviously great. But against the competition, I think there should have been a lot more layups. There should have been a lot more, you know, a lot more shots going up inside 10 feet as opposed to long-range shots. We were 3 of 18 from 3, and I think about 10 of those could have been, you know, an extra pass or something else. So it was discouraging to see that. I know it's the last game before Thanksgiving. These guys were ready to get out of there and get a break. But still, you got to commit to what you're doing and do what you're doing the best to your ability every night out. And this team's still going to have to learn how to do that on a daily basis because we're expecting so much of them this year. And when we hit Big Ten season, they're not going to be able to have an off night like tonight and cruise to a win.
Yeah, you know, it's amazing that you can look at aspects of tonight's game and consider it an off night. And in many respects, you can. I mean, the final score, you know, the margin was nice, 73-49. You know, but I saw a lot of the same things you did, and I was tweeting this out on our Assembly Call Twitter account. You know, that was my biggest frustration, too, like you said, was shot selection. And specifically in the half-court offense, you know, I felt, although we went a little bit fast at times in transition, you know, we were able to convert occasionally in transition. I thought, you know, there were some definite times I can remember coming out of timeouts and just on set plays where we did a really nice job of getting shots, but our half-court offense just stagnated. And I kind of chalk it up to a little bit of a lack of focus. You know, and I think we settled for some shots early in the shot clock that you can get at any point in time, and that's something that coaches and fans are going to harp on all the time, you know, when you take a three-pointer after one pass with 30 seconds left in the shot clock that you can get any time. You know, and you look at some of the numbers. I mean, you know, we know that our field goal percentage has been great all year. It was under 50% for the first time this year. We were only 3 of 18 from three-point range, and some of those were open looks. We were 12 of 23 from the free throw line. So I think from an offensive perspective, the focus just wasn't quite there tonight. But I didn't necessarily think that was true on defense. I thought we had, for the most part, good energy and good awareness on defense. And obviously holding Gardner-Webb to under 50 points, to 36.7% shooting. You know, I mean, they only shot 43% too from the free throw line. So who knows? Maybe they were a little, you know, not quite as focused too. You know, but I think that's what's nice to see is even on a night when our offense wasn't as great and we've become used to this team scoring 90 points a game, you know, so seeing us in the 70s is strange, we're still able to win by 20-plus points in cruise because our defense was so good. And I think that plays in, you know, we heard Coach Crean a lot before the season started talking about how this team was further along defensively than they are offensively. And I think that hasn't necessarily played itself out in the first four games, but we did see that a little bit tonight. But when we lose focus and don't make the extra pass and don't do some of the things in the half-court offense that we've been doing, we're not as effective on offense. All right, folks, again, you are listening to the Assembly Call. I'm Jared Morris of Midwest Sports Fans. You know my host, Ryan Phillips of Rumors and Rants. He's with me every episode here. Andy Bottoms will be calling in a little bit later. We're going to be looking ahead to IU's next three of their next four opponents, Butler, NC State, and Notre Dame. Of course, the game with Stetson is in there as well. The number is 323-843-6016. Call in. Talk about the Hoosiers. What were your observations from tonight? What do you want to see from this team moving forward? And, of course, we will be joined by Alex Bozich of InsideTheHall.com, one of my first stops every day for IU News. He's going to be calling in here probably in the next 5-10 minutes, and we'll get his perspective on all things Hoosiers. Okay, Ryan, one guy that I want to talk to you about tonight is Derek Elston, and I thought he had another really good game. We talked about him a lot on the last show, but I think it bears talking about him again because he came in, he had 10 points. He had 8 rebounds. He even started the second half in place of Jordan Hulls, who, you know, once again had one of those games where he just really wasn't looking for a shot and it was kind of out of sync on offense. You know, in terms of Elston, what do you continue to see out of him that shows that he is just such a different player than he's been his previous 2 years here?
It's confidence and energy, I think, are the two things that he consistently brings. Even if he is missing shots, he's always around the ball, on defense and on offense. He's constantly crashing the boards. I mean, tonight he grabbed 8 rebounds, had 10 points, was 3 of 5 from the field. He came in about in the early in the first half, and it was, I think we were up about 10 and or 8 or something, but there was really no life to the team, and part of that lead was because Roth hit a 3-pointer off a reversal. And so sometimes when you hit a couple threes or something like that, you get kind of a fool's gold lead where you're not really playing better, but you've hit a couple shots. And he came in, he nailed a 3, he was just active defensively. And I think what we saw tonight was Coach Crean early on went to his older guys to try and get some energy into the team and try and get them to sort of push the younger guys a little bit. You saw Roth in there early. You saw Elston in there early. You saw Daniel Moore and Pritchard all getting in the rotation within the first 10 minutes because I think that he sensed, yeah, this could be the kind of game where we get off slowly and we need some energy and we need somebody to push us. And that was nice to see. Elston, I'm starting to get to the point where I'm going to expect this from him, you know, and I think that's a good thing. I think that that's the kind of guy we've always expected him to be, someone who can hit a jumper, but who also is going to be around the ball, in the block, like in the post area, not necessarily a post scorer, but he can put it in. He had a great back cut and layup tonight, a reverse layup tonight. I mean, you just see something from his game every game so far this season that has given you even more confidence in him, and I'm sure the coaching staff feels the same way.
Yeah, I agree with you, and it's been nice. You know, I mean, we've heard. You know, I see a lot of the guys on Twitter. You know, the guys who are around the team talking about how he's finally healthy. You know, this is what Elston can do when he's finally healthy. And certainly, you know, I think looking back on it, maybe I didn't realize some of the health issues he had gone through and just some of the physical ailments. But there's definitely a difference. You know, and certainly I think some of that plays a part in it. And he's, you know, he's a huge part of this team, obviously, because he is the depth behind Christian and Cody down low, and he's going to have to play big minutes, especially come Big Ten time, and I think he's proving right now that he's going to be able to handle that. Now, you know, we talked about some of the half-court woes that I think were pretty obvious for this team. One of the things in the half-court, though, that did impress me was our interior passing, and I don't think that we've always been a team that you could look at and say that we passed well in the interior. Number one, just because we didn't get inside very often to even see if we could. And number two, I've always felt that, you know, our decision-making on the offensive end of the floor has been lacking the last few years. But we saw a number of excellent interior passes today. From Cody, we saw a couple from Victor Oladipo. I think Verdell had one in there. Were you noticing the same thing? And do you think just the addition of Cody and having that inside presence is allowing some of these guys more space inside to do some of that interior passing that's leading to easy buckets?
Well, not only that, but he, you know, Cody makes those guys look good by finishing the opportunities, and that's something we haven't had in a while either. I think Christian Watford is starting to look for Zeller a lot more. Tonight he caught a ball about 4 feet from the basket, and two guys shaded over to him. He just dumped it off to Cody for a lay-in. I mean, that's the kind of thing you need from a guy like Watford, and you need him to diversify his offensive game. So it takes, and what he'll realize, and he hasn't yet, he's getting there, is that the more he encourages defenses to focus on Zeller, the more opportunities he's going to get. And so it's a reciprocal thing. And I think guys like Watford who are used to being the man for years, it's really hard to change to turn that switch and realize, hey, if I give the ball up, I'm going to get it back. And if they have to focus on him, that's going to leave me with a chance to do something and play my game. And, you know, Christian was 3 of 9 tonight. He fired up 3 3-pointers. I could have done without at least 2 of those. But what I think he's starting to realize is, hey, if I catch the ball within 5 feet, I'm going to score. And so you see him in more of an attack mode when he gets the ball on the block now, as opposed to, you know, just having his back to the basket, keeping the ball out, and just looking to give it to somebody else. But as far as the interior goes, I think, yeah, you are seeing guys like Verdell and Oladipo and Watford have more confidence passing the ball on the inside because there's more of a chance that something will actually come of it, as opposed to maybe in the last couple of years where they'd hand the ball to Pritchard or get the ball to Pritchard, and he just wasn't looking to attack at all, and he would just give it up. So there's almost no point in doing that. So now I feel like this team is not only confident in Zeller, but they're confident that, hey, let's at least try and go up on the inside and see what we can get, you know, if it's a foul or whatever. And so, yeah, I think that it's one of those things where they're probably practicing a lot more and they're getting used to giving it up on the inside to Zeller, and that's just making them more confident in passing the ball around.
Well, let me ask you something. And, again, we're going to be joined by Alex Bozich from InsideTheHall.com here in just a moment. You know, looking at the stat line, Verdell Jones and Jordan Hulls, they combined for 5 points. They were 1 of 5 from the field, 0 of 4 from three-point range. Concerning at all?
You know, I'm concerned a little. I was concerned with Hull's performance because he looked like something was off, not necessarily like an injury, but he just looked like there was something wrong. Because he had a couple open threes that he normally nails, and just they were way off. He hit a nice long jumper, and he didn't start the second half, so that was concerning to me. As far as Verdell goes, I thought he played great defensively, and so I look at that and I think we didn't need him offensively. So, you know, it's okay that he finished with only 3 points. Obviously, I'd like to see him shoot better than 3 of 6 from the free throw line, but he only took one shot from the field. And I think I don't think it's because he was just, you know, relaxing on the outside. I think he was actually looking to do some things. He had 4 assists. I mean, it wasn't his best game, but guys run into those clunkers of a game. And I thought he played well on the defensive end, and that made up for any offensive deficiencies.
So. Well, you know, and I think there's almost a positive to take from it. You know, you look at a game where maybe Verdell can't get into the flow offensively, or he's just not feeling a shot. You know, that might have been a game in the past where he goes 2 for 10, and tonight he goes 0 for 1. He didn't force shots, and I think sometimes the best shots that Verdell Jones takes are the shots he doesn't take, and the best passes he makes are sometimes the ones he doesn't make. You know, because we know that Verdell has a chance sometimes to play a little bit fast, to not play within himself, to force things. At least we've seen that in the past. I think we're seeing a steady progression of with more options, you know, with Verdell being able to be more of a complementary player as opposed to a go-to guy on an inexperienced team, he's really starting to make better decisions with the ball. Okay, we are now going to go live on the phone lines here. We are joined by Alex Bozich of InsideTheHall.com, one of my first stops every day for IU basketball news. It should be yours, too. Alex, how are you tonight?
Good, Jared. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks a lot for coming on the show with us. I greatly appreciate it. Before we get into some of the questions, what were your general thoughts on tonight's win over Gardner-Webb?
I actually thought it was probably, from just a complete game perspective, one of the least impressive efforts of the season so far. Just the first half seemed a little bit out of sync. I felt like they should have kind of blown this team out from the beginning. You look at the Pomeroy numbers, preseason at least, for Gardner-Webb, I think they were the third worst opponent on the whole schedule. And so it was a bit surprising that it was close at halftime, but the second half, I think Victor Oladipo really kind of gave them that spark. And then also Derek Ellison and Will Sheehy both played really well. But overall, it definitely looked like a team that's ready to move on and play some better competition. Here as the season goes along, they have not been tested. So I can't blame the guys for that. But overall, I thought it was a bit of a sloppy game, but they picked it up in the second half.
Now, one guy that I want to talk to you about, and we haven't necessarily talked about him in depth yet tonight, is Cody Zeller. And Cody finished with 13 points. He had 9 boards. He had another efficient game shooting the ball, 6 for 8, and had some really great, some great interior passing. Now, on InsideTheHall.com, I think it was yesterday, in your Savannah State notebook, you posted a quote from Tom Crean. One of the things I love about your site is that you guys post a video of Coach Crean's press conferences almost immediately after the games. And I noticed this quote when he said it and again when you wrote about it. But he was talking about Cody, and he said something interesting. It was, quote, "You can go at him and you can play through him," and talking about the impact that Cody has on this team. Can you kind of break down that statement, and what exactly is Coach Crean saying with those two things in terms of how Cody impacts this team on both ends of the floor?
I think it's a theme he's kind of hit on throughout the early stages of the season, is basically kind of how he opens things up for everybody. I mean, if you give him the ball down the block, and like last game, Savannah State. They chose not to double team him, and he ended up with 23 points. And then most of the other teams early in the season have double teamed him, and he's kind of opened things up for everybody else. So I think what you're seeing, especially out of that quote, I think Crean was careful not to give Zeller too much praise for how much better he is making the team. But then if you kind of read through the question, through the answer, he kind of started off saying that he couldn't quantify how better he makes everybody. But then by the end of the answer, he was, you know, kind of singing the praises and saying, you know, all the great things that he does for the team. I think two guys, specifically Christian Watford and Derek Elston, both are going to benefit greatly from having Cody. If you just look at kind of, you know, who they were playing off of last year, it was Tom Pritchard, who's basically not an offensive threat at all. He really hurt IU. I thought, you know, the past couple of years especially, he didn't look to score at all. And now you have a guy down there that can shoot at such a high rate. He is going to draw defenses all season long. And when you have a guy that's getting double teamed, usually he's going to have somebody else open. And I think Watford and Elston have been two of the biggest beneficiaries of Zeller's presence so far.
Yeah, and I certainly think they'll continue. And I think we all expected Cody to have a big impact on the offensive end of the floor. One thing that I didn't necessarily expect, and I wasn't, you know, I don't live in Indiana, so I wasn't able to see a lot of his games in high school. I wasn't ready for how good he is defensively, especially just from an awareness perspective. I mean, he just, especially for a freshman, just always seems to be in the right place, has great anticipation. And I think one of the buzzwords we're hearing from Coach Crean, it seems to me more this year, and you can, you know, you can tell me if that's true, is deflection. And it seems like because Cody is back there, the guys are able to play more aggressively on the perimeter, overplay passing lanes, and get a lot more of those deflections that are leading to some of the breakaways. I assume that's something that Coach Crean has focused on all 4 years. Is it something that has become more of an emphasis this year because he knew that we would have more of a presence inside?
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the defense as a whole, I know that's been a criticism, obviously, of Crean a little bit through his first 3 years is, you know, these guys aren't playing defense or, and, you know, Indiana was struggled defensively specifically last year. But a lot of it comes down to, you know, the players that you have on your team. And quite frankly, the past couple of years, the talent has not been where it needs to be. So Crean was pretty much working the best with what he had. So I feel like I don't want to give too much credit defensively yet to Zeller because he hasn't, you know, the competition that he's played down low to this point hasn't really been, you know, high major talent. But he's definitely making an impact. But I think the main thing is just having a guy back there that can block shots and make smart plays. I think one of the things the past few years IU's had big guys, you know, Tom Pritchard and Bobby Capobianco that picked up a lot of fouls. And I think the one thing that stands out to me about Zeller, even through high school, you know, you had teams that were going directly at him trying to get him in foul trouble because they knew that the way to beat Washington was to get Zeller out of the game. And he just didn't – he never fouled. So I think that speaks to his basketball IQ fundamentals and just kind of his awareness down there to know that, you know, he has to make smart plays. He doesn't try to block shots that he's not going to get to. He can change a lot of shots. And I think that's a key for IU this season is to keep him out of foul trouble and on the court.
Yeah, once again, everybody, we are joined by Alex Bozos of InsideTheHole.com, one of the preeminent voices on IU basketball. You're listening to the Assembly Call post-game show. We've got a couple minutes left with Alex. One question that I have that I think a lot of people are probably thinking right now, you know, we've had some heralded recruiting classes discussed since Coach Crean got here, the class of Watford and, you know, and Creek and those guys, obviously the class that's coming in next year and, of course, getting Zeller. One of the lesser recruiting classes really was last year's when Victor Oladipo and Will Sheehy came in. And as we know now, this year, those are two guys who are really keying, you know, this new-look IU squad through five games. How surprised are you, if at all, about the role that these two guys have so early in their careers?
You know, coming into their IU careers, I didn't know much about either guy because, you know, I see a lot of the kids from the Midwest and AAU, and Sheehy and Oladipo you know, obviously didn't play AAU or high school around here, so it was hard to kind of learn much about them. But I knew that after watching them for a couple of games last year that the talent was there. It was just getting comfortable to the college game and getting stronger for both guys. And I think what you're seeing early this season, something that Coach Green's talked about a lot was both of those guys spent a lot of time in the off season trying to get better. Both of them played in that pro-am in Indianapolis over the summer. Both have added weight and strength to their upper bodies. So I'm not really surprised at the role that each of them have taken on. I felt like maybe Sheehy would make a bigger impact this season, but I think Oladipo has been a little bit better thus far, but I think both of them brings, Oladipo has the potential to be that lockdown defender that Tom Crean has talked about needing to have. And for Sheehy, he's just been that spark off the bench that, and I feel like, you know, he's really accepting that role. I don't think he feels like he should be in the start. I think he feels like he's comfortable coming off the bench. And so you're right. I think that class did get overlooked quite a bit, but looking back on it, that was two pivotal pickups for Tom Crean. And it just goes to show that sometimes the recruiting rankings don't mean as much as some people think they do.
Yeah, that's for sure. And we've seen plenty of guys at IU. A.J. Guyton comes to mind as a guy who was, you know, very underrated coming out of high school that ended up having a great career. And I want to stay in the backcourt a little bit. And you know, I know we only have you for a couple more minutes, but I want to talk a little bit about Jordan Hulls and Verdell Jones. You know, to me, it looks like Verdell is playing a lot more within himself this year, being able to be more of a complimentary player than a go-to player. And Jordan, we know about how fantastic of a shooter he is, but he's just been so inconsistent in terms of looking for a shot and being able to get involved in the offense. It's something, you know, that we saw last year, too. What are your general impressions of those two guys, and how do you think long-term they're going to fit in, you know, with this team now that is going to be more keyed with an inside presence of Zeller and able to run up and down the floor more effectively, which we weren't able to do the past couple of years?
Starting with Verdell, one of the big topics of conversation when we recorded the first episode of Podcast on the Brink, Greg Rosenstein and Matt Dollinger had me on, and one of the first things we talked about was Verdell Jones and his role this season. And I was pretty to the point that I felt like Verdell needed to take on a lesser role this year, basically because of the fact that he's not a very efficient offensive player, or wasn't last season, and his turnovers were high. But thus far this year, he's kind of actually been one of the more unselfish players on the team. He's not turning the ball over very much. So I think if he continues to play this way, he can definitely be a positive most of the season, I feel like, for IU. There's going to be obviously some teams with quicker backcourts. It's going to it'll be better suited for IU to, you know, play Oladipo and Sheehy on those guys. But Verdell has, you know, been a pleasant surprise in my eyes early in the season. And for Jordan Hulls, he has been inconsistent looking for a shot, but I think he's also going to be relied on less maybe for offense this year than he was last year. I know with some of the injury problems that IU went through, and with Oladipo and Sheehy just being freshmen and getting kind of adjusted to playing in the Big Ten, I feel like Tom Crean asked Hulls to take on a bigger load offensively. And now that he's got more weapons at his disposal, a healthy Derek Elston, he's got Cody Zeller down low, he's got, you know, plenty of guys to get the ball to. I feel like maybe Hulls is being a little bit too unselfish and passing up some open shots. And I just think that's something that he's going to have to work through. And it's only five games into the season. But I think, you know, once Big Ten rolls around, he should be playing at a high level.
And quickly, before we let you go, what are your thoughts on the upcoming Butler game? What should IU fans expect? Is this going to be much more of a real test than the first five games have been? Or is Butler not quite the Butler that we've seen the last couple of years?
Butler's not a good offensive team right now at all, as you can see. I checked the score, I think, a couple of minutes before they came on. They were, you know, neck and neck with Savannah State, which they're not a very good team at all. And defensively, I think Butler's going to be probably the best team IU's gone up against so far. So it'll be interesting to see if they can continue shooting as well as they have. And Andrew Smith will be a good, interesting matchup for Cody Zeller, because obviously to this point, he hasn't really been tested. I think IU should win pretty comfortably. I'm looking a little bit actually more forward to the game at NC State because NC State just had made a big comeback tonight on Texas and going on the road against an ACC team. Even though they're picked to finish middle of the pack, I think if Indiana can go in there and win that game, it'll tell us a lot more than winning at home against Butler. But obviously everybody points to Butler because it's a school from Indiana. They've been to the championship game 2 years in a row. What do you guys think?
You know, I agree with you. I mean, you know, just seeing some of the reports on that NC State game from tonight and, you know, reading about, you know, their game against Vanderbilt, it sounds like they're a team that may be better than people thought. You know, and again, like you said, you know, I think the biggest thing everybody wants to see is to see Cody especially go up against some better talent. You know, and you brought that up earlier, and I think it's a great point that, you know, that'll give us a much better indication of just how much different this team is, you know, when we're able to see these guys up against some better competition. And hopefully those guys will be able to do that. And then, of course, we have that game looming in a couple weeks with Kentucky as well. Is that a game you're looking at? And, again, I know you have to go. Final question, I promise. Is that a game you're looking at Indiana as being able to compete in? I mean, based on what you've seen now from us, what you've seen from them, is that a game we should be expecting to compete in?
I mean, they were – 2 years ago, I think they were either only down one or maybe even up one 2 years ago when they had him at home, and that was when Kentucky had John Wall and DeMarcus Cousins, and Indiana was not nearly the team they are now. And then last year, I know they were in the game to the final 10 minutes, I think, down in Rupp Arena, and that Kentucky team was, you know, a couple of plays from making the national championship game. So I definitely think it's a game that they're going to be in. The one thing you kind of look at with Kentucky is right now they're only playing – you know, it's kind of similar to what they did last year, seven or eight guys, and I think you can get away with that more right now in college basketball because all the TV timeouts and, you know, playing, you know, not, you know, it's not going to hurt you as much playing your guys 30 or 35 minutes. But Indiana, you know, if they can get some of those guys in foul trouble, Kentucky doesn't really have a lot of depth. So I think it's a game they're going to be in. I'm not prepared to say it's a game they're going to win at this point. But obviously it'll be a good test, I think, to see kind of how much better they are than a season ago, because I feel like the last year at Kentucky, they kind of hung in there for about 30 minutes and then just kind of got blown out the last 10 minutes. I feel like there could be a similar situation this year. We'll see how they respond when Kentucky gives that kind of final push down the stretch and if Indiana can keep answering the calls. But yeah, it should be a good game. I think it's a game Indiana can definitely be in and have a chance to win.
Well, and hopefully with our, you know, increased size, increased depth, increased experience, that'll help us down the stretch in some of those games. I know that's something everybody's looking for. Alex, thank you again for coming on. Again, everybody, that was Alex Bozich of InsideTheHole.com. Check them out, especially after games, if you want to see a post-game reaction from Coach Green, from the players. They really do a great job. They also have podcasts on the Brink on Thursday afternoons, which is definitely a must-visit destination for every IU fan. Alex, again, thank you, and you're welcome on the assembly call anytime.
All right, thank you, guys. Have a good night.
Yep, you too.
Thanks.
All right. Alex Bozich of InsideTheHole.com. And I have to say, there are a lot of great Indiana sites out there, and I am definitely not blowing smoke, not trying to be deferential to our guests by saying that's the first place I go for IU news, because it is. And real quick now, we also have Andy Bottoms has joined us. You know Andy Bottoms from the first couple episodes of the Assembly Call from the Bottoms line on Midwest Sports Fans. Andy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, Andy is here. How much of the game were you able to watch tonight?
It wasn't too bad. I'll tell you, I'm in Pittsburgh traveling for work, and tonight was a night that for any hockey fans up there, it was Sidney Crosby's first game back, so I was the one guy in the sports bar saying, hey, can you throw on this IU Gardner Webb game for me? I know that you have a lot of people here who want to watch either Monday Night Football that they were getting ready for or the Penguins game. So luckily I found a place that was willing to indulge me and throw that on at the TV by me. So I got to see probably the last three quarters of the game, I'd say.
Well, very good, very good. It's nice to you've had quite a sports evening then. You know, and you know, we've been talking about the game. We just talked about it with Alex. Ryan and I obviously talked about it a little bit. I'd like to get your general impressions of the game tonight, first off. And then I don't know if you were able to listen to Alex, but, you know, Alex was talking about how Butler, just from an offensive standpoint, really is not a very efficient team this year, but will be Indiana's toughest test from a defensive standpoint. And I think after these five games, everybody's kind of looking towards the future for this Hoosier team and how we're going to do against the stiffer competition. So, you know, what did you think of the Hoosiers tonight? Just some general impressions. Give us your bottom line of, you know, what led to the victory. And then as we look forward, what are some of the things that you look for in IU's matchup with Butler that Hoosier fans can expect?
Yeah, I thought I did get to hear probably not all, but a decent of your time with Alex, either walking back to the hotel and stand or while I was here. So, you know, definitely things for me that stood out. I really thought Elfton played well. I'm not sure if you guys talked about that. You know, to come out, start the second half, and really has, you know, I think people probably knew on some level some of the injuries and things like that that he'd been trying to fight through the past couple of years, but, you know, and maybe that's only a part of what is allowing him to play so well consistently this year, but that was one thing that I was definitely struck by is just how well he played and the fact that, you know, 10 points, 9 rebounds in 15 minutes is pretty impressive there. I did hear you guys talk a little about the spark that Oladipo gave to start the second half where it felt like they were kind of maybe not quite sleepwalking through the game, but definitely an area where at some point, which is, again, not something that we've been able to say too often, that an IU team came in a little bit overconfident or relaxed a little bit as an inferior opponent came in. So definitely talked about those couple things. And you know, Butler, I've been watching the score a little bit. I did watch some of their game with Louisville over the weekend, and I think, you know, that's just spot on from an offensive standpoint. I think they're still trying to figure out who their scorers are and what they can do. I think, in general, Andrew Smith inside, who I know I talked about a show or two ago, has been, I don't want to say a disappointment, but has struggled to, you know, to become a consistent producer inside. So that's been one factor. You know, Kyle Marshall, I think they expect a lot of coming off this summer. Has been a little slow to do that, but definitely defensively is a team that's going to at least, you know, really get up into IU, try to slow the game down a little bit, and do some of those things where, you know, Gardner Webb tonight, right or wrong, the way that they typically play is to play a pretty fast-paced game and go down and jack up shots. Butler's not going to do that. They're going to try to slow things down a little bit and give themselves the best chance to win. So, should be interesting. I think, like, right now, Butler's up 14 on Savannah State, so they've pulled away quite a bit in the second half. But, you know, for IU fans that watched some of that game when they put earlier in the year, to think that Butler was down to them by three at the half, to make everybody feel pretty good. I think that'll definitely be a hard-fought game, and one, again, as we talked about before, that IU, certainly a year that they should win a game like that, but definitely probably a different level of intensity that they'll see from an opponent, and also some things where there's a lot of local kids on the Butler team who you can drum up a little bit of that motivation of, hey, they didn't recruit you, and all those kinds of things, where some of the teams that have you know, have come into Assembly Hall so far haven't been able to try to play that card as they get everybody ready to play.
Hey, Andy, this is Ryan. I was just I was wondering, obviously this weekend against Butler, I think we all know that IU is not going to be able to get out in transition as they have done early in the five games so far. I just don't think Brad Stevens, regardless of who's on his team, is going to let that happen. Are you a little worried at all? I know I am. I'm just wondering how you feel about the half-court offense so far that we've seen from IU.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good test, and I think, you know, whether by design or by chance, I think it'll be a good test for IU as they go through and play, because they're going to have to, you know, you're going to face teams that want to slow it down a little bit as you get into the Big Ten, the Wisconsins, the Michigans, and those kinds of teams who are really going to force you to execute, where they've been able to get a lot of things in transition. I do think, though, they've, you know, had some nice plays. I recall a backdoor cut or two by Sheehy in the first half where they really got people cutting to the basket and doing things like that. And it's probably as good an opportunity as any to take advantage of some of the things that Zeller can do from a passing standpoint, where you've seen some of that over the first few games, and certainly going to be an area where, you know, Brad Stevens, like anybody else, is going to see what Zeller's really bringing to the table. And you would have to think they're going to run some double teams at him and make him, you know, make him make plays and decisions and passes that will lead to things. So it would definitely be interesting. I probably a little bit worried. I think interested as well, just to see how they react to something like that. Because really, any of the teams so far, they've let them get, you know, out to a fairly comfortable lead and not being able to do that. And really, nobody has tried to slow the game down at any point. And you know that Butler's going to do that because that's what they're going to need to do in order to win. So maybe I'm not as worried as you, but I think it'll be another good test, kind of as they evolve and get ready to go into this tougher stretch of games they got coming up.
All right, everybody, that is Andy Bottoms of the Bottoms Line. I'm Jared Morse of Midwest Sports Fans, and, of course, we have Ryan Phillips of Rumors and Rants here, the normal trio that hosts the assembly call after every IU basketball game. So far, Indiana is 5-0 with assembly call postgame shows planned afterwards. Is that a coincidence? I don't think it is. maybe I'm giving us a little bit too much credit. One thing I want to talk about, and that we haven't touched on as much tonight, we touched on a little bit with Alex, you know, talking about how that recruiting class of Victor Oladipo and Will Sheehy, was underrated. And I want to talk a little bit about Will. I thought, obviously, that first game of the season, he came out those first 10 minutes and was just spectacular. And I felt, you know, ever since then, he had to leave that game with flu-like symptoms. He's kind of struggled to get into the flow. Tonight, you know, he had a stretch in the second half. I think he scored 10 straight points. He was absolutely fantastic in that second half when Indiana really extended that lead. And for me personally, one of the things that I admire most about Will's game is he is our best basket cutter. By that I mean he finds opportunities to cut to the basket and to get easy open looks. And, that always to me has been one of the most underutilized cuts in basketball. You know, people like to do, cuts to get open for three and different things. But so we see guys not enough cut just straight to the basket. Just go to the bucket, and it's amazing how often you'll just get a pass and be able to be open. So, Ryan, I want to get your take, and Andy, I want to get yours too, just, you know, kind of your five-game impression of Will Sheehy, and specifically, tonight, him playing a little bit more under control, finding better shots, because certainly shot selection has been something that maybe has been lacking from him a little bit this year. Ryan, I'll start with you. What are your general impressions of Will, and especially tonight, how he was able to play out there in that victory over Gardner Webb?
Well, one thing you never have to question with Sheehy is his energy. He's going to come in and be a guy who's going to bounce around, has a ridiculous athleticism, and, you know, is always a great energy player. But I've been critical of him the last few games because I thought in that first game he hit a couple shots, and then I've been lamenting the fact that, oh, man, I really hope he doesn't fall in love with his jump shot. And he did that, I think, for a few games where he just wasn't – the problem with a guy who develops a jumper is he starts to realize, well, hey, sinking a three is easier than driving and getting fouled and hammered, and I can do this. And they forget that what they really do well is get to the hoop. And tonight I think that he was really looking to get to the hoop or at least get closer. He had he hit a three, and I thought also he had a pull-up in transition and things like that. Those are fine because that's in the flow. What I don't like is where a guy catches it, maybe dribbles two times, and then just fires one up. And he had done that a couple times in the last three games. And I think tonight, as you said, he was much more under control. He was letting it come to him and not forcing it. He had two pull-ups that were in rhythm off of a pass, and tonight was a much more mature game from him than we've seen in the last three. Again, you're always going to get energy out of him. You're always going to have the potential for a ridiculous dunk or, you know, some kind of really athletic play. But I thought tonight he harnessed that a little and used it within what the team was trying to do, much like he did in the opening game. And if he can play like he did tonight, he's going to be a huge boost to the team as the season goes on, particularly in Big Ten play because he's a tough matchup, being 6'6 and really athletic. It's going to be tough for people to guard him, to find a specific guy to guard him, and he can play great defense and even guard some of the guards in this conference. So I thought tonight I was really impressed with a guy that I've been hard on over the last couple days, and kudos to him. I thought he was probably the MVP of the game.
All right, and Andy, your thoughts on Will?
Yeah, I mean, I would really echo what you and Ryan said. I think just watching him being able to take, you know, floaters in the lane and different things like that, where he seemed to, at least for tonight, find a good balance between being aggressive and being overly aggressive, where he was taking the ball to the basket, he wasn't settling for jumpers, but he also wasn't putting himself in positions where he's going to commit offensive fouls and doing things like that, and really played to, you know, what his strengths are in the mid-range area tonight. You know, whether he eventually becomes a dead-eye three-point shooter, it remains to be seen, but I think, you know, that's something that probably right now isn't in his best interest. So he did a good job of getting into the lane and trying to do some things that way. So I was pretty impressed with him from a, you know, maturity standpoint and the growth, and made me, you know, not that you doubted him at that point, but it was nice to see him kind of like Watford after the first couple games. It made everybody feel a little bit more at ease to see him play so well against Evansville. I'd say kind of the same thing tonight with Sheehy, where he had a few games where you weren't quite sure and which way is this going to go, and tonight kind of reaffirmed everybody's belief in his development so far.
All right, everybody, we have got 45 minutes left in the presentation for you. This is, of course, the Assembly Call IU postgame show. We are live immediately after every IU game, and so far that's been after every IU victory, which hopefully will continue. And again, remember, this show is about the fans. The show is by fans, for fans. We want you to call in. The number is 323-843-6016. Call in. We'll get you on the air. Get your thoughts on IU basketball. Okay, so we've had these five games. I want to start looking forward, and I want to spend, you know, kind of the rest of the time that we have here tonight looking forward. And I think everybody's really been looking forward to this next stretch of games for IU. You know, assuming that we navigated through these first five games as we have. And again, you know, something important to remember, this is the first time since at least 1939, based on a tweet that Ken Bickoff sent during IU's last game, that the Hoosiers have won four or more games to start the season, winning by a margin of 20 points or more. So that's impressive. You know, there's a lot of IU, good IU teams, obviously, that have come through that haven't been able to do that. Now, a lot of that is of course, based on the competition. But when you have competition like IU's been playing, you should beat them by the scores IU's been beating them by. So certainly, you know, we can take some positives from that. But now things stiffen up a little bit. And we play Butler next Sunday. We play NC State the Wednesday after that. Then we have a game against Stetson on the following Sunday. And then, of course, the big game against Kentucky on Saturday. So we've talked a little bit about Butler. And I think a lot of IU fans obviously know about Butler just from, obviously, being in state, from their performance in the tournament. We all know about Brad Stevens. We know about guys like, you know, like their center, Andrew Smith. You know, so we've talked about those guys. And even though they're down a little bit this year from what they've been in the past, a team I don't think a lot of IU fans know is NC State, and they've been a little bit of an unknown, but they played Vanderbilt very tough, and just tonight, while IU's game was going on, Texas jumped out to a 10-point lead on NC State in the first half. NC State ends up outscoring them by 13 in the second half to take a 77-74 victory. Now, Andy, you previewed every single conference for your Bottoms Line college basketball previews. You know as much about all these teams as anybody that I know. You know, tell us a little bit about NC State, what we can expect, and is this a team that is better at this point in the season than you thought they would be?
Well, it's interesting because I was following some of the other games on Twitter while I was watching the IU game, and I guess what happened in this one, Texas was out to a relatively, I guess what seems, comfortable lead in the second half. Jacobin Brown, who's their guard and leading scorer, picked up his fourth foul on, I guess, what he deemed to be a questionable call, and then had a word with the official subsequent to getting whistled for his fourth foul, which then he got called for a technical, and he fouled out of the game. And at that point, pretty much the wheels came off for Texas from everything that I could tell. So things went off the tracks pretty quickly there. As far as NC State, though, I mean, I do think that to a certain extent they've been better than people thought. They have a decent core of guys. They're not a deep team. By any means, and I think a lot of people, as you know, Mark Gottfried went in there, didn't have a like many of the hires, I guess, in the offseason, was not a slam dunk, wow, everybody gets super excited about it kind of hire, based on, you know, what he had done at Alabama and those kinds of things. So they've been, you know, just to kind of give a quick recap, I mean, they haven't been. So they beat North Carolina Asheville by 9 in their first game. They beat Morehead State by 30. They beat Princeton only by 2 in a game that came down to the wire. They lost to Vanderbilt by 7 in the, I think, some kind of, I think, Ticket City Classic is what they were playing Texas in, and they beat Texas by 3 tonight. So, you know, kind of a mixed bag of results, some games that were, you know, close against teams that you might not have thought they would be. You know, a couple larger victories and probably a game over Texas where you didn't really you would not have assumed that they would have won that one. So a little bit interesting in terms of their, you know, personnel and who they have. They've got C.J. Leslie, who was a pretty highly touted freshman last year. You know, he missed the first few games of the year on a, you know, another kind of obscure NCAA suspension about something that a lot of people probably don't really understand, borrowing somebody's car and something like that. It was a little bit strange. So he's there. Richard Howell is a big man as well as Deshaun Painter. So Howell was averaging a double-double going into tonight, I believe. You know, Painter, another big guy inside. It drops off fairly quickly after that. They've got Lorenzo Brown, another sophomore, who's a point guard. So they're relatively young with some of these guys. But, you know, Godfrey teams have been playing pretty well so far, and definitely a team that's outplayed what their expectations were coming into the season. So it should be probably a tougher road test than many would have thought coming into the year. Although if you look at some of the margins on the NC State schedule, you know, the fact that they're now 4-1 after those first five games, there have been some close games, and there really haven't been a whole lot of blowout victories for them. So it'll be it should be, again, a more competitive game than I think most people thought coming into the year.
I want to get both your guys' take on this. Just looking at the post-game numbers, and I had seen that Coach Crean had said after the game that defense really led IU to the victory tonight. And, you know, when you get a 24-point win, it's nice to think that, you know, the offense wasn't all that was working. But tonight we held Gardner-Webb to 49 points and forced 18 turnovers, but we only had 5 steals. And I think that was a real key to that, is just knowing that you're playing better overall defense as opposed to necessarily jumping out and getting steals and things like that. Because steals aren't necessarily a mark of a good defense. They just sometimes come, you know, if you read a play correctly. But the fact that we forced 18 turnovers and only had 5 steals, I think to me at least, is a big deal to show that these guys are playing good on-ball defense and forcing turnovers and forcing bad decisions from the opposition without necessarily reaching in, grabbing the ball, or jumping in passing lanes. I was wondering how you guys felt about that.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, you look at it, I didn't get to watch part of the game from over the weekend, and you know, kind of think about thoughts on the fifth game and how many fouls were called toward the end of that. But it definitely felt like, at least tonight, again, without having seen that a lot, IU only called for 19 fouls, which is not great, but it's not terrible either. So, you know, some of the same messages that we've talked about before, they're able to defend effectively without fouling this year, where last year fouling was just, I mean, the opponent was just parading to the line with great regularity. Although, given that Gardner-Webb shot 7-16 from the line tonight, perhaps, you know, could have put it in there even more often, I guess, and not been hurt by it. But, you know, I think it's a good point, Ryan, where there really weren't a ton of turnovers, but they still were able to defend effectively, held them under 30% from three and only the 36, almost 37% from the field. So definitely kind of the constant evolution of the defense. Like, a lot more deflections again tonight. I don't know. I heard you guys talking about that a little bit when I called in initially, but just very much more sound fundamentally. And, you know, again, you can attribute a little bit of that to the opponent where you didn't have a big guy really that they were going to dump the ball into and things like that. But definitely just the activity level on defense, you know, creating 5-second calls, doing things like that, been a pretty far cry from what there was last year.
And we're about to go to the phone line, too. We've got a call from the 812. Before I take it, real quick, Jeff Rabjohns of Keegs, to go with your point on deflection, just tweeted out that Victor Oladipo had 17 deflections, which is the most during Tom Crean's time at Indiana. So that goes to the point you made, Ryan, and obviously to what you were just saying right there, Andy. Okay, let's go to the phone lines. We've got the 812. Let me make sure you're all right. 812, you are on the air. What are your thoughts on IU basketball?
You got Chronic coming from the 812. What's up, gentlemen?
Chronic, what's happening? I should have your phone number memorized by now.
Just don't share it, all right? I'm actually just getting into the car, man.
Well, it's good to have you. So what were your thoughts on the Gardner-Webb game and kind of looking forward as the schedule starts to get a little bit tougher?
I think we pitched a defensive gym tonight from where I was sitting. It was certainly wasn't one of the prettier games, at least offensive from a flash perspective. But damn if it wasn't a fine defensive performance across the board.
Yeah, well, you know, and like we were just saying, I mean, just from a deflection standpoint, Victor Oladipo had 17. I thought he was outstanding tonight. You know, the team as a whole, it just showed. I mean, on a game, on a night when we're struggling a little bit offensively, you know, our defense can really key us. And that was kind of what we were hearing from Coach Crean coming into the season, that this team was further along defensively than we were offensively. Is, you know, I mean, from a defensive standpoint, we did play well. I think everybody on the call tonight has discussed, you know, kind of a lack of efficiency on offense. You were there. Did it just seem like maybe the kind of the focus was a little bit not there on offense? It looked like we were settling for some shots early in the shot clock that we haven't been doing. What do you kind of attribute our poorer offensive showing to tonight?
It certainly seemed like we struggled to get into a rhythm early on. You know, that was maybe part of it. I think maybe part of it as well is the fact that we're building a lot of film for coaches to scout on at this point. Our offensive playbook is admittedly not that deep. Maybe we're going to start seeing teams try to take away more of what we're doing well. That said, though, we didn't have, you know, once we got into a groove, we didn't have too much of a problem going to option B or even option C at times. I haven't even seen final stats tonight. I've been catching up with some people in the gym after the game here. But, you know, we're spreading the ball around really well. The ball movement was about as crisp in the second half as perhaps it's been in the last couple of games.
I mean, it's
making a lot of people involved.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish your point.
No, I was just going to say that's getting a lot of people involved right now.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've definitely been doing that. You know, I mean, the scoring has been very balanced. And one of those guys who has been coming in and providing an almost unexpected scoring boost is Derek Elston. You know, and you had a tweet earlier tonight that I loved that you said you can tell Elston has unlocked beast mode when his tattoo starts to glow. You know, so I'd like to know where you got that information about his tattoo glowing. And also, you know, just in terms of Elston's play, I mean, what are you noticing from him? Obviously, the confidence is one thing, but what else are you noticing from him on the offensive and defensive side of the floor that's different this year as opposed to the last couple of years?
Well, first of all, I know his tattoo's glowing because the boy's obviously hitting the tanning bed. You know, it's like he's on permanent vacation right now compared to some of the other Caucasians on the floor. That said, though, you know, it just the kid is clearly healthy. And, you know, this one of the things with Derek that a lot of people have to keep in mind is not only has Derek battled injury since he's been at IU, last year's was more severe than the knee issues he had as a freshman, but keep in mind, too, he had surgery at the end of his junior year of high school. He had knee surgery. So we haven't seen Derek fully healthy at 100%. Better part of the last 4 years. A lot of the scouts didn't get to see Derek healthy that junior year, rising senior AAU season as well, because he sat the whole time with the injury post-surgery. So I think we're starting to see perhaps what Kelvin Sampson had first seen when he started recruiting him early on. This is a kid with a really high motor. He's got a body that can bang, but he's got a nice mid-range shot. He's not afraid to get into the paint. He's proving to be a very dynamic option for us on offense and defense, for that matter.
Yeah, and he's proving the faith that Coach Crean has in him. I mean, Coach Crean's been calling him, you know, one of this team's seven starters, and that's proving true just in how those guys are playing together on the floor. Now, obviously, the guy who all the attention has been on is Cody, and he had another solid game, 6 of 8 from the field, 9 boards, 13 points. But as Alex Bozich from Inside the Hall brought up earlier tonight when we had him on as a guest, it's a little bit tough to draw too many conclusions about Cody, only because the competition that he's faced down low hasn't been, you know, high major big men that he's faced yet. And so obviously we're going to learn a lot about him moving forward. But what are some of the things that and especially against Butler, you know, where they have Andrew Smith, a guy who has played in Final Fours, played in championship games. What are some of the things that you're most looking forward to watching, you know, in terms of how Cody deals with the increased competition? And how do you think he's going to do as the competition steps up?
I think he has some physical liabilities coming into some of those matchups that he's going to face here down the road. One of the things I'm most interested in seeing right now is how can we schematically protect Cody in some of those matchups? You know, what can he draw up as far as help side, as far as some ISO plays on the post that's going to keep Cody in a position to stay on the floor? Because what I suspect we're going to start seeing is teams are going to identify that we are a completely different squad when he's on the floor with us, both offensively and defensively. And as a result, I think you're going to see Cody starting to get attacked a lot more on the defensive end. I think the ball is going to go at him often, and you're going to probably start seeing it early in the game and try and get him in some foul trouble. one of the keys, I think, getting into this stretch coming up is what can we do to protect him from getting into those fouls. He's wise enough that he's not going to commit a lot of stupid fouls, a lot of wasted fouls, I guess, on the post. But I think the opportunity for him to have to watch that is going to start increasing here real soon. So I'll be real curious to see what we can do to keep him on the floor longer as far as drawing up some help side defense, maybe having to employ some double teams. We're switching well enough now. I think we can get away with it. You know, one thing we haven't seen yet this year, I'd like to see you start running some press. You look at the way that our backcourt can get out after it on defense. If we can defend that well in the half-court set, I thought now would be a perfect time to try and extend the defense a little bit and see how that works out in the event that we got to go to it down the road here.
Yep. Everybody, we are on the phone with Chronic Hoosier. This is the Assembly Call IU postgame show. I'm Jared Morris. Andy Bottoms is here with me as well. Of course, Ryan Phillips from Rumors and Rants has been with us. We are talking about another IU victory tonight over Gardner-Webb, 73-49. And, of course, we're here on the Assembly Call every time IU plays right after the game. Now, Chronic, you've been at the games. What has, and obviously I have not been, I've been watching them from my television set here in Dallas, wishing I was there at the Hall. What's the feeling been like at Assembly Hall? I know it's probably been a little bit difficult to tell. You know, this is a holiday week, and, you know, the competition hasn't been great. But, you know, what are you feeling just in terms of the energy, the excitement, in terms of years past, you know, as you compare it to some of the early season games?
You know, I went to the game with my best friend tonight. This is the first game we've actually got to catch together. We were roommates at IU together, grew up playing high school, actually grew up playing elementary school ball together. So it's always fun to get a chance to sit down and kind of jaw with him during the game today. And he had actually commented to me about how the crowd is starting to get more riled up over some of those smaller details, things like charges, things like a 5-second, you know, players getting on the floor. There's that one series where Jordan and Cody were both on the floor scrapping after it together. And the ovation that followed that was as loud as I've seen for a defensive play, especially considering the gym was relatively sparse tonight. You know, with an early Monday tip, Thanksgiving week, a lot of students are gone right now. I mean, I think the general admission section was about half full with the students tonight. But, you know, the cheers are still roaring pretty loud on some of those. And it's something we haven't seen here in the last couple of years. You know, that element of the game has kind of been waning. I like to think that Hoosiers are connoisseurs of fine basketball and can appreciate those more subtle elements of the game. And some of that's starting to creep back into the gym, and that's certainly a good thing, in my opinion.
You know, and in terms of what I was going to say is, you know, in terms of being connoisseurs of fine basketball, and you're right. I mean, you know, look, I grew up going to games in Assembly Hall. You know, sat 7 rows behind Coach Knight. You know, in the late '80s, early '90s, which featured some of our best teams, including the '93 team, which is my absolute favorite sports team of all time, and should have won a national championship if Alan hadn't hurt his knee. But that's a discussion for another day. You know, when we talk about connoisseurs of fine basketball, we've been used to some really well-coached teams. And I think a frustration for Hoosier fans the last few years has been not always feeling like the team was well-coached or that it responded necessarily to Coach Green. As well as he's done so many other things, I think we all questioned a little bit his ability as an X's and O's guy, in, you know, his ability to grow players. And I think, you know, to me, at the start of the broadcast tonight, my banner moment, you know, which suggests to me that we're on the right track, is, you know, coming out of halftime, we've been a lot better this year. And yeah. You know, especially tonight, you know, Victor, I thought, played with a lot of energy the first 8 minutes, you know, struggled a little bit the last 12 minutes of the first half, struggled a little bit coming out. Green put him on the bench. He comes back in, gets a steal, gets a bucket, you know, has a nice cut, makes a pass, really keyed us extending that lead. And it was something that gave me faith in Coach Green, not only from being able to put in a plan at halftime that allowed us to extend the lead again, but also knowing how to push the buttons of his players. And that, you know, putting Victor on the bench early in the second half seemed to motivate him. Are there other things that you're seeing that are giving you more faith in Coach Crean as a leader of this team moving forward?
You know, speaking of going back to the whole thing about being connoisseurs of the game, there is a 70-something, almost 80-year-old lady that was sitting one row in front of me, one seat over, who'd actually commented to her husband, who I think slept through half the game. Late in the second half, we had an inbounds play, and Pritchard got a bucket off of it. And she had actually said, well, what do you know? We actually drew up an inbounds play that worked. Coming from an octogenarian, I thought that was pretty damn funny myself. you know, that's been one of those things where, you know, as good as you felt about the team, there are still so many things that said, yeah, maybe if. So maybe if even we get all the talent, maybe we're still going to have some liabilities from a schematic standpoint, from a coaching standpoint. And like you said, you know, we're starting to see some signs that the guy actually knows what he's doing, that he can push the buttons, that he can make the adjustments and get the team back on track when need be. I'd like to see us start to increase our efficiency coming out of timeouts. But, hey, it's a step in the right direction. So that's certainly promising as well.
Yep. Now, I don't know how much time you have with us tonight. Of course, I always appreciate when you call in. So if you need to go, just let me know. Otherwise, I'll keep asking you questions.
Hey, man,
I'm
rolling down Jordan Avenue right now.
I wish I was there. One question that we talked about a little bit is, you know, and not to dwell on the negative at all, but, you know, a guy like Jordan Hulls, who, you know, has struggled a little bit at times to kind of get, you know, to get into the rhythm, to get his shot off, and then other games has really been in kind of in the groove. What did you see out there tonight? It looked to me like Jordan was just a little bit out of sync this whole game.
It seemed like he wasn't getting shots in the flow of the offense necessarily. Some of those shots, even though he was open, for some reason it just didn't feel right for him, and I think that was bore out by his shooting percentages tonight. You know, I'm real curious to see one thing. You know, one of the new challenges we're facing this year is we have a lot of scoring options. And what can we do from a coaching standpoint to make sure that everybody's getting involved? You know, my concern is Jordan's one of the best shooters in the nation. What are we going to do to get this kid more than a couple shots a game? You know, and this is going to be that could be one of the most telling things about this season, perhaps, is how he manages all these options, knowing what he's got coming in next year. And knowing he's going to keep a lot of guys happy.
Yeah. So, Chronic, this is Andy. But I just had a quick question. Get your take on somebody who's pretty polarizing within the fan base, at least coming into this year. And I know I heard Jared talk a little about before, which would be Burdell. So I'm not sure that I can recall a game when I would have thought, "Wow, he took only one shot tonight." You know, given some of the criticism, and as I told Jared the other night, I pretty much judge how well he's playing by whether or not my dad calls and asks whether they can take his scholarship away. So at this point, he's doing pretty well. But I mean, what do you think's been the difference for him, you know, this year to be able to come into a game and like tonight and let things come to him and not force the action? What have you seen in person that's really been the difference for him?
For Verdell, I think it's not having to be the primary scoring option. You know, when we didn't have a lot of other scoring threats on the floor, you know, we had a really, really bare cupboard, and I think Kareem recognized that, and I think Kareem pretty much gave him carte blanche to go around and just do what Verdell did. And, you know, it's funny that you said he only had one shot tonight.
Yep, one shot. He was 0 for 1 from three-point range. He got to the free throw line six times. And made three from there, but he had four assists, two turnovers, and three rebounds, at least according to what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I would guess that he had five missed shots, to be honest with you, simply because, you can tell when Verdell is regressing to old Verdell when he's dribbling the ball around. Our offense is functioning best right now when we're passing the ball. Whenever Verdell has to take more than two, three dribbles, the offense is going to get out of sync. And for some reason, I felt like that was happening more and more tonight. And that's probably the result of, or that's how all his free throw attempts resulted, where he's driving and trying to attack and trying to go out there solo sometimes. When Verdell can let the offense flow around him, when he's distributing the ball, when he's moving the ball, when he's taking what he just can't pass up, but only taking those shots, Verdell's really going to, you know, he's going to fulfill his role as best as he can right now. It always scares me when Verdell starts to decide he's going to go independent contractor on us. And I'll be curious to see how he manages that out here in the coming games when we're faced with some stiffer competition, as if he tries to revert to the old self where he feels like he has to put this team on his back and force stuff that's just not there.
You know, and Coach Kareem is very complimentary of Verdell tonight. Just reading some of the tweets from guys like Zach Osterman, you know, Coach Kareem, Verdell is playing excellent. You know, really has had some nice things to say. Another quote that Coach had tonight that I'd like to get your take on, Chronic, is he said about Victor Oladipo, when he and they were talking about how Victor is kind of gaining a reputation as a defensive stopper. And he said about him, when he turns that up, that's not coaching, that's a gift from God. So you've been in the gym. And you know, I remember, you know, when I was a student going to games when AJ Moye was there, and just the energy that he brought and the excitement, the intensity, you know, when people are chanting his name and just his ferocity. And it's so much different trying to gauge that from the TV as opposed to being in the gym. I mean, now, I would not even come close to suggesting yet that Victor has the impact on the fans that AJ did, and he's got a ways to go before he can get there. But, you know, when you're in the gym, is his energy, is his excitement a lot different than it is when you're just watching on TV?
It's certainly palpable. You know, I don't know if it came across in the broadcast tonight, but the students were chanting his name, the Ola Depot. You know, I thought my buddy turned to me and said, this is when you run the press right now. You know, Victor's out there slapping the court. He's jacked up. He's getting stops and turning it into points. You got to keep throwing fuel on that fire. Victor's got the potential to be a real special player, I think. He is a good defender. That length of his is something that you just don't see. What is it, plus 12 wingspan?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, and you combine that with his hops, his speed, that first step he has, his acceleration is really remarkable. It's not just the top-end speed, but how quickly he can get into a sprint. Just makes him a lethal, lethal defender, and makes him really dangerous off the dribble as well, or cutting for that matter. So I think once you can kind of hone those things, you know, he had admitted, I think in the last press conference, that he, you know, when he learned to stop overplaying so much on defense, that was really one of the keys to his excelling in that realm. So you still see it peep in every now and then where he, if whenever Victor gets beat, he likes to try to do this reach around behind him, and he got away with it sometimes. But my fear there is that always is going to give him false confidence. You know, he's better off moving his feet than rather than trying to move his arm around the guy once he's already passed him. But you know, Victor's going to be one of those guys that's going to get a lot of chance. Pretty special. Actually, my buddy was just bummed tonight because he couldn't buy a Victor jersey for his son. You can't buy any jersey for the kids this year. You get a blank and you have to wait for them to print the numbers on them, which I think is pretty lame, but that's neither here nor there.
Are you serious? I was going to buy my brother a number 40 jersey. I haven't been willing to buy a 40 jersey until someone came along that was worthy of it after Calvert. And, you know, I'm thinking Cody's worthy. I can't do that.
You can get him a jersey. It's just not prêt-à-porter. You just can't buy it off the rack. You've got to let them put the numbers on. So if you're ordering it up, probably won't miss a beat in the whole cycle of the shipping and delivery. But if you go into the gym and you want to buy a jersey for a kid, you can only buy a blank right now.
Right. Well, they got to fix that. Good Lord.
Yeah,
good Lord,
we got to keep working on it, trust me.
Yeah, well, no, I'm sure you do. Now, speaking of athleticism, you know, we talked about Victor. Obviously, the other guy who just leaps out at you with athleticism is Will Sheehy. So I want to ask you a question. In terms of white sports stars in the Midwest, who's the more underrated white athlete right now, Jordy Nelson of the Packers or Will Sheehy of the Hoosiers?
That's a tough one. I think Jordy's doing it on a bigger stage. He's having some more consistent results. Probably against some better competition. I'll tip that one to Jordy. We'll see where Will's at the end of the season, though, and that's something I'm real curious to see is where is he? We've seen, in games, was it last game where I think he ended up going double digits, but he really had to work for it late into the game when he wasn't playing against the starters, and early in the game his shot just wasn't coming to him. And while I fully support him doing whatever he needs to do to get into a rhythm, at the same time, not at the detriment of the offense like he has. And that was one thing we've seen a couple times now where Will comes out and he's a little cold, but he keeps pushing it, and he's going for it outside of the offense. And that's not something I think we want to see going forward. But, you know, again, one of the keys is what can we do to get him involved within the offense early on so that even if it's not falling, we've still got people in the right position to get the rebound and perhaps get the putbacks or at least get some second-chance points out of it. So we'll see. You know, I think Will's going to be one of those guys who I foresee being really streaky. When he's hot, man, he's just about unstoppable. But like everybody else on this team, you know, he's going to have to start doing it with his defense first. And he has some lapses as well. At the same time, though, kind of like Victor, when he's got that defense dialed in, the shots are going to start falling for him pretty easy, I think.
All right, so this is Andy again. We talked a little bit before about the schedule coming up and and what that might mean? I mean, what kinds of things are you looking for? And on the one hand, it's been great to see these 20-point wins. On the other, I'm a little bit interested to see how they perform when there's a little bit of pressure on them in a tight game and who they go to and things like that. So what are you looking for as they get to what I assume at some point over these next few games, which I guess maybe if not, I won't be too disappointed either. But, you know, as the games get tighter, you know, who do you think they look to in clutch moments when they need a basket?
I think a lot of it's going to be matchup dependent. Like yourself, I'm really excited to see what happens when we start facing some stiff competition, when the athleticism level, when the forgive me, that's my garage door closing behind me. When we're faced with some tougher challenges and we've got some legitimate big bodies out there, they're going to give our posts some issues, and you've got some some faster, stronger, more athletic guards that we're going to have to go up against. It's one of those things where I don't necessarily think it would be wise right now. Not for us so much, but even for the players to start figuring out or start pinning this guy as here's our go-to. I think we're going to be best served when we're taking what matchup is going to be most advantageous for us. And when you've got seven scoring options on the floor, somebody's going to have a favorable matchup that we're going to want to exploit. The key is going to be, you know, how readily can we identify it and how effectively can we exploit those matchups. I think it's going to change from game to game just based off what we've got coming. You know, this stretch coming up here is going to tell us a whole lot. And I picked the Butler game out of that. Well, I think Butler will be a great game to be at. The way that they're performing right now and where they're trending, I think we take Butler by 18. If I had to set the line right now, I don't think it's going to be that close. I think they may give us a better challenge than what we've seen so far. But I think we're going to stretch it, and I think it's going to be a pretty big game for us. That said, though, once you get into the NC State, what do we do? NC State, Stetson, in Kentucky, then Notre Dame. Is that correct? Something along those lines?
Yeah, I think. Yeah, that's right. I know Notre Dame was getting worked pretty good by Missouri last time I saw that score tonight. So not sure what you make out of that. I know that was the first game ever.
Was all over Butler in the first half. I guess Butler's kind of got the lead back since then, but. You know, I think that's really going to be the proving ground for where we are coming into the Big Ten season is how we come out of that that four-game stretch right there.
Yeah, it's a good contrast, I think, in styles when you look at, you know, Butler's going to slow down a little bit, Notre Dame obviously going to do the same. Kentucky's going to look to play more up-tempo and, athletic, and I think NC State probably falls a little bit more in that realm, too. So it's a good cross-section of teams, I think, to get them prepared for what's likely to be another good, you know, variation of tempos and different things like that when they come into the Big Ten season.
Yeah, unquestionably.
Chronic, let me ask you a question. We've only got about 10 minutes left in the broadcast, so we'll let you go here in a little bit. Again, we appreciate your time with us tonight. But I got a question about this Butler game, and I don't know how much insight you'll be able to lend to this or not. But in terms of Crean and Brad Stevens, Tom Crean, you know, one of the things I love about him is he is a competitive, he's a prideful guy. And you can just, you know, you can see that. I mean, he lives and breathes winning and losing and, a lot like, his brothers-in-law, the Harbaughs. And, obviously he's facing Brad Stevens, and Stevens has been to the last two championship games. You've, I'm sure, heard IU fans who have talked about, hey, I wish we had Brad Stevens. Personally, I have vehemently always been in Coach Crean's corner and have said that I want him to win. He's the guy, and I would not trade him for Brad Stevens right now, even though I know many Hoosier fans would. Do you think, from your perspective, you can feel free to address that if you want to, but the question I have more is, do you think that Crean looks at that game at all? I'm sure he wouldn't say it, but do you think he looks at that game with some extra emphasis to say, hey, you know, I'm the coach of this team. I know I'm going up against Brad Stevens, but I'm going to beat this guy because I'm better than him. I mean, do you think that he's looking at it from a team perspective, or do you think he thinks in his own mind some of that mano a mano stuff?
I think Crean has an ego that we can't even comprehend, to be honest with you. and I think that certainly is playing into this. If you look in years past, even in Crean's first year at IU, when he really had nothing to work with, the way that we played Michigan State, the way that we've played Kentucky, I think those are the two biggest indicators of his ego. Those are the two coaches I think he envies the most. Obviously, Izzo being his former mentor, he, in my opinion at least, I think he covets Izzo's identity. He wants to be known as the perennial tough guy, just great coach, always fields teams, that are just going to be gritty and are going to go out there and compete and get the boards and just do all the little things that win the games. Conversely, I think he covets Calipari's his fame. You know, Calipari is the flashy coach that's, you know, always he's just got the profile. You know, he's the NBA maker. I think Crean has one foot in both those doors as far as what he covets. That said, we've always played really, really well against those two teams when we have comparatively been really not that good in all our other games. Those are always Crean's coaching opuses, if you will. I think you're probably going to see the masterpiece of his career at IU thus far against Butler. I have heard that we don't have another game for the remainder of this week simply because he wanted the additional time to prepare for Butler. Who is that non-conference game we have in the middle of the conference season? Is it like Coastal Carolina? I forget who it is. We have some team in the middle, I think it's in February, that just
North Carolina.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that game was supposed to have been this week from what I understand. And Crean bumped that back because he wanted the additional time to prepare for Butler. So Crean knows that this is a really big game. Well, you know, he's not certainly going to lose his job. Whether if he loses this game, he knows that the burner is going to get turned up that much higher if we do. Crean knows that there are a number of blank checks written payable to Brad Stevens that are floating around Bloomington just waiting to be turned over to the athletic department. They've been offered, and I know this for a fact, okay? There are some people that just think Brad Stevens is the man for the job. And, you know, part of me gives a little bit of credence to that. With all the job offers Brad Stevens turned down, you know, I know he wants to come off as a great company guy and he's a Butler guy through and through and all that. I think this is the one opportunity that Brad Stevens would jump for. I think he'd crawl on his hands and knees if he was offered the Bloomington job. And there are a lot of boosters that are aware of that that would fully support that. And I think Crean is fully aware of all that. So, yeah, I think egos are going to play a lot in this game. I think you're going to see us come out. I think we may have our most efficient game of the season, to be honest with you. I think he's going to have these boys so keyed in. You're going to see one of his coaching masterpieces, is my guess, come Sunday.
Having said that, would you be more disappointed then if we do come out and play poorly, knowing how much he's probably going to focus on that? You know, I mean, the old adage about Coach Knight always was, you know, you give him a week to prepare. You know, he can take yours and beat his, beat yours, you know?
Yeah.
Knowing all that, would you think less of Coach, you know, Coach Crean, if they come out and don't play one of their best games?
You know, it's certainly going to be it's going to be something that raises the expectation, knowing that we've got this extra time, knowing that the Butler's pretty vulnerable right now, knowing that we're firing on all cylinders. You know, the way this thing stacks up, we should throttle them. So any letdown along those lines is going to be disappointing. But yeah, knowing that we've moved things around, that's one of the reasons that the schedule release was delayed, was because they had to account for our change in the schedule late in the period before the schedules were announced. So, yeah, you know, there's certainly a lot of subplots going around this one. And, you know, keep in mind, just from a local perspective, there have been a lot of there's been a lot of trash talking here the last couple of years. You get all these indie kids that come down here. IU's not been that good in football or basketball, for that matter, and Butler is back-to-back, you know, national championship contenders. So there's been a lot of trash talking. You know, people that really care about the program, they're a little sore about that. You know, you don't like seeing Butler raising up and actually having the higher ground to talk trash to you about playing better basketball. And not just they were winning, it was just for playing a beautiful game, and, you know, the way that Indiana has always been known for playing. So, you know, there's a lot on the line as far as that, just the bragging rights, being able to silence some of these people and let them know that, you know, Indiana basketball is back. What you just saw is an aberration that happens once every 50 years. You know, this was the NCAA version of Milan, and that run didn't last for that long. So, order's about ready to be restored to the college basketball world in Indiana, I think.
Yes, I agree with you. And I personally fully expect Tom Crean to be the coach here for the next 15 years, and I want him to be. I think he's earned that just with how much, you know, he's respected traditions and how hard he's worked and some of the things he's done. So,
Let me step in right there, though. And this is my one bone with Tom Crean, Jared. And I'm with you. The guy is my coach. I'm going to follow him to the end of the earth as long as he's our coach. That said, and Tom talks a really big game about IU traditions, okay? I've offered to create a position within the athletic department as the director of traditions, or the conversely, the I want to head the department of WTF, so that whenever somebody has a crazy idea, I want to be the guy that steps up and says, WTF, what are you thinking? Really? Do you really think it's a good idea to encourage the students to dress up as superheroes? Do you really think it's a good idea to encourage the student section to dress up in neon? Keep in mind, this is all Tom Crean here, okay? Tom fancies himself quite the marketing expert. His first year, he had a disco ball, a DJ, and game systems installed in the balcony.
I didn't know that one.
Yeah, we're doing theme nights right now. We have spirit nights, I think, coming up. We get to look forward to Ugly Sweater Night at Assembly Hall, which, in my opinion, should be nothing but faded 1986 starter sweaters with the Charlie Brown stripe going across them. You know what I'm talking about. That said, though, you know, Tom's a big fan of canned music, not so much for the band. The whole big head things. I was sitting here tonight looking out over the student section when they're hoisting the big heads up. It obstructs the view for 90% of the kids that are sitting in the student section. I don't know about you, but if I was sitting courtside for a basketball game and you tried to block my view with Lady Gaga's cutout head taking up 3 foot of my visual, I'd probably hit you in the back of the head.
Yeah. No, I've never been a big fan of those, I'll admit. But those started before he got here.
No. That was all his.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I stand corrected then. You're probably right.
There may have been a couple posters that were brought in at one point, but he thought, I forget where he picked it up from, he thought it was the coolest thing, that it was some way to distract the shooters. You know, so much so, and the kids are all into it, and I support that. I'm glad to see them getting fired up about it. But, you know, they're doing the whole thing tonight where they do the left, right, sit down whenever somebody fouls out. The problem is we're doing that when somebody fouls, and we're in the bonus like we have been for most of the time we've been playing, they're still doing their thing while we're at the free throw line. And they're yelling, left, right, sit down. Was it Riddell? Who was it? We went 0-for-2 on a series of free throws when the students were playing games with the opposing team. So, you know, some of those things, traditionally, when you start talking about being connoisseurs of the game, I'd like to think that we're smart enough to know that when our own guys at the free throw line, it's time to shut up and let the man do work.
Well, we need to teach these students how it goes. I think some of these newer folks, and my brother's one of them because he goes to school there right now, they still need to learn exactly what it means to be an IU fan, especially as a student. That's for sure.
Right, we're about ready to have to add it to the curriculum. If I'm not mistaken, I think we're at 47% of the student body right now is out of state, and that's just been a number that's been increasing throughout. So, you know, we were actually pondering that tonight, going how much of the attendance issues as far as students showing up late. I mean, the kids are showing up. This is a break, so we didn't have so many of them. Early season's always iffy to begin with anyhow. But just the attendance thing in general, you know, if these kids aren't coming until halfway through the first half, how into this are they really? I'm wondering if there's not a corollary there with a lot of the out-of-state and a lot of the international students that are getting it just because it's socially the cool thing to do, but aren't necessarily, you know, big basketball fans.
Yeah. Well, those are great points. Well, you know, I can't wait to see how things go in that Butler game. Before we let you go, Chronic, and again, we appreciate you coming on. You've given some great insights. We delved into some topics I wasn't expecting to, but we may need to turn this into just a normal podcast, not a post-game show, and I'd like to kind of discuss some of those things more with you. But, you know, as you look over these next 5 games, and obviously the competition is going to be much stiffer in 4 of them with that Stetson game in there, that should be a little bit easier. What is your expectation for the next 5 games? You know, Butler, NC State, Notre Dame, Kentucky with Stetson in there. What do you think we should be coming out of that, and what do you think our record will be in those 5 games?
Ideally, I think 4-1, I think it's a realistic expectation. You know, would I be terribly shocked if we were 3-2? Not really. I'd be pretty disappointed, I guess, if we were 2-3. But really, I mean, if I had to lay money on any options right now, I'd say we're going to come out of this thing 4-1, to be honest with you. I like where we're at. We're really starting to gel. Our team chemistry is dialed in well enough, particularly on defense. And one of the things that I have picked up on, the communication on the floor is infinitely better this year than what it has been any time, even at our best defensive times over the course of the last 3 years. The guys are calling out screens. They're calling out switches. They're, you know, it's just nonstop chatter on the floor. They're really dialed in, and I think the defensive efficiency and the improvements there that you're seeing is in no small part due to the fact that these guys are actually talking. They're playing team defense. So that's really positive to see us that far along this early in the season. And, you know, it's so weird, though, because Cody's really the only new factor, at least in that starting seven that we're dealing with, but how it has an infinite difference on how just the overall cohesion, the bonding of that team. They're all really, really buying into it. The guys are just there, and they have that sense for the first time in a while as a tight-knit, bonded team. So that's always a positive thing to see. I think they're going to have to rely on that. I think that's what's going to give us the edge going into some of these more challenging games, is how these guys are going to have to get through it together, because we're going to run into some games here coming up where the one-on-one matchups are going to be grotesquely not in our favor. And it's going to be how they can help each other on defense.
Well, I agree with you. Well, Chronic, thanks again for calling in, and hopefully we hit the upper end of your prediction and go 4-1 in these next five and keep the momentum rolling going into conference season.
Hey, happy Thanksgiving, guys. Thanks for having me on. I'll catch you here soon.
All right, happy Thanksgiving. You're welcome anytime. Give us a call.
See you guys later.
All right, and we've got another caller on hold. Let's go. Oh, and the caller did not drop. 765. We only have a little bit of time left, but you're on the air. What are your thoughts on the Hoosiers?
Hey, actually, what I chimed in about was I'm from Indianapolis, and I tell you what, we all grew up IU fans, but with this Butler phenomenon, I don't think they are a phenomenon. I think they're more of a fluke than you guys. They're not a fluke. I'm seeing more and more and more people here be Butler fans. I don't think they're going to be the mega team that goes to the NCAA every year, but I think there's kind of a new sheriff in town. Do you think you honestly think Butler's a fluke?
I'm going to let Andy hop in here in a second and talk about this. I don't think Butler is a fluke because I think they're so well coached. And I do, you know, while I am firmly in Coach Green's corner, I do respect the heck out of Brad Stevens, and I think he's a great coach. And I think he's going to be able to succeed, not having to recruit 4- or 5-star guys all the time, but recruiting guys like Gordon Haywards and like Shelvin Max that may go under the radar, but fit his system. And when you can do that and really teach the game of basketball and teach it in a way that is an equalizing way against more athletic teams, which is what they do by playing smart offensively and tough physical defense, I think you can continue to compete. And by no means am I taking this Butler game lightly, I think that they're just going to be a flash in the pan. I mean, Andy, what do you think about Butler moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo what you said. I think that, it's a great situation where you see a lot of, you know, quote-unquote mid-major programs get, where they get a coach in who really understands the kind of players that fit their system, and they can get guys that they are in on early because they see something in them that fits their style of play. And by and large, as they compete for top recruits, they're probably not going to win out, but they know their spots with these guys. I mean, I liken it to a little bit, you know, not academically, but, Harvard, where, Tommy Emmerich really made a lot of headway there. Well, he's done it by honing in on some top kids who actually, he thinks he can sell the value of the Harvard education to, and that would be able to qualify for the school. And I think it's similar to that. I think those coaches have almost a more difficult time in some ways because they're trying to find guys who fit a niche versus, I'm John Calipari and I'm casting a pretty wide net on the top, 20 players or whatever. You know, you've really got to hone in and spend your time on guys that you feel like that you can get and that fit your system and things like that. So I think that's where, Butler's really done well, and they've also benefited a lot from, I think we talked about this a couple shows ago, as I was growing up in Indiana, I mean, IU was, was really the school and things like that. And I think now you get, a generation of kids that's coming in high school. It hasn't been, what they know of IU is not what, other people have. And he's done a good job to take advantage of that. I think that's really, and people see Butler going to the national championship game. I mean, quite honestly, most kids in high school now probably have more positive memories of Butler performances in NCAA tournaments than they do IU, and he's smart to be able to capitalize on that. So no, I don't think it's a fluke at all. I think it'll be interesting to see, you know, if and when he should decide to move on to someplace else, how the next coach is able to sustain that. But they've been able to do a pretty good job as they've, you know, moved through different coaches over the past, you know, 10, 15 years.
Actually, you know what I'm seeing here in Indianapolis? Kids that are like 5 or 6, like my niece and nephew, they're 5, and they're twins. But she has like the Butler Bulldog on her bed, and he's got the Butler poster. And when I was growing up, it was all IU. And now Butler's really, when you go into a bar in Indianapolis, you'd see your Colts logo, your Pacers logo, and your IU logo. Now you see the Colts, the Pacers, and Butler. It's really winning over Indianapolis, and you're right, this generation's really starting to love them. And I'm even starting to turn because, you know, I have to love somebody else's baseball team and hockey team in this town, but at least now we've got a college. That's it's going to be interesting to see what happens with IU, Purdue, and Notre Dame when there's a fourth sheriff in town because, you know, they're really winning over Indianapolis. And then to have the NCAA here, you know, that was like, that killed, like when the Colts played the Bears in the Super Bowl and beat them. That just destroyed what was left of Bearsdom in Indianapolis from the, you know, pre-80s days. Just killed it. So, yeah, I think if Butler starts beating IU, I kind of look for Indianapolis in the next generation or two to be a Butler town if they keep this up, if it really is a fourth sheriff in town. You know, so this game's got a lot riding on it more than you think. You know, they could start losing whole sections of the state as fans.
No, I agree.
Bob Cachet's gone. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there is a lot riding on this game. I think that's a great point. And I think like Chronic said, I think Crean is going to be hyper-focused on having the team ready because I think he's keenly aware, you know, not just of that fact, you know, from a fan support standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, but also from, I mean, just from the standpoint of people in his own fan base. I mean, there is a loud faction of IU fans, and I talk with them regularly, that right now, today, would trade Tom Crean for Brad Stevens. Now, I wouldn't do that.
Wow.
I think part of what makes Indiana basketball special is loyalty, and I think that he has certainly earned the faith and the trust to see this job through. But I agree with you that there's a lot riding on this game, and no matter if Butler's supposedly down, whatever, they were supposedly down last year, and they still went to the championship game. So I think the one thing that you can see is this. IU fans, whereas before a game against Butler might be overlooked, even though Butler might not be quote-unquote as good this year as the last 2 years, I don't know one IU fan that's overlooking this game, and I have a feeling the team's going to feel the same because of how the coach is thinking.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. I have to admit, I mean, you know, I don't know if I'll ever convert fully over to Butler, but yeah, there's a lot riding on this game. But I tell you, anymore, if you see an IU shirt, they generally got a walker. You know, the younger group here, I'm talking, you know, Andy, starting to convert to Butler. So, yeah, I don't know. When you said that, I thought, I don't think they're a fluke. I think there's a fourth sheriff in town because they're already starting to pull teams. I mean, they're starting to pull guys from the Midwest that normally would have went to the other three. You know, so I don't know. I'm ready for this game, guys. I want to see. Butler was talking about how they could make money without raising tickets because they're scared they won't have as many people because the team's not as good. So that's the first thing I've heard about a chink in the armor, but then that could just be a PR stunt. Or I've never known a school that didn't need more money. Yeah.
Everybody needs more money these days, that's for sure. That's for sure. But, no, it's going to be a fun game. I'm greatly looking forward not only to the game but the post-game show afterwards. You know, that's kind of been the one we've been looking towards, is the one where people are going to have the strongest reaction. I think if Indiana comes out and really plays well and beats Butler like we think they can, it's going to solidify what happened in these first 5 games, and it's going to confirm to people that this is a different IU team. And if the Hoosiers come out and struggle, and God forbid if they lose, it's going to bring back all the negativity from the last 3 years. So I agree with you. It's a huge game, and I think people's perception of are going to go one way or the other after that.
Well,
Andy.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I just think IUPUI was a fluke when they got to the brackets and everything. IUPUI, that qualifies as a fluke. I just don't think Butler does, but I don't know. Maybe I'm becoming a homer. I don't know.
You said you live in Indianapolis, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm lifelong Indianapolis, and I even grew up downtown Indy. Yeah.
Well, look, There are a few towns in America I respect more as an amateur sports town than Indy. And I think it's a town that, you know, they've proven with the Colts and with the Pacers, they'll support a winner. They aren't necessarily always the most faithful from a professional standpoint, but I think they've been starved for a team in the city to support because it's such an amateur sports town. And Butler has given them that. I mean, heck, I was rooting for Butler the last 2 years in the Final Four, even knowing that more Butler success would make things harder on IU, but the story was just irresistible. And so, of course, people in Indianapolis are going to be thinking like that. So, hey, that's natural.
Hey, you don't see IU symbols like you used to. You see that bulldog more and more and more. So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, it's going to be fast. I wish I was alive in 100 years to see how all this will play out, because it takes about a generation for a team, you know, for a lot of this to happen. Yeah.
Well, it's happened. The last time IU legitimately competed for a national championship, of course, in 2001, we came out of nowhere. But no one thought that was a championship team during the season. The last time we legitimately competed was 93, and I was there for every home game of that year. That was the last great Bob Knight team. It was the last truly great IU team, I think. And that was 18 years ago. I mean, that's almost a generation. So, you know, and that's, you know, there's people like me and obviously the older generation who were used to that kind of excellence, and now the hope is that we get back to that point. And if not, there's going to be a natural evening out of things in the state. And I think all IU fans, the expectation is that we're going to be up at the top, and we're expecting that to happen. So, caller, what's your name? I'm sorry, I don't like referring to you as caller.
Oh, it's your name? It's Elwood. Yeah, I like your show. There's very few Indiana shows on Blog Talk, so I was like, you know, the state of Indiana, you know.
Well, great. Well, hey, we appreciate it. We're here after every game. We certainly appreciate you calling.
Yeah, I've listened in before, so. Well, I went to IUPUI, so I'm kind of an IU Hoosier, so.
Yeah, well, of course you are. Of course. We always, hey, the IU part is much better than the Purdue part of IUPUI, so.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah, that's why they put
IU,
it at the beginning. So it only makes sense.
Yeah. IUPUI flows better, but yeah. See, I wanted to go to Butler, but my brains and checkbook sent me to IUPUI, so.
Yeah.
Why didn't you go to Butler? I thought, I'm not smart enough, and I'm not rich enough. They're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. But, you know, we got to do. Hey, Elwood, thank you for calling in, man. We will be here after the Butler game, so we look forward to you calling in.
Yeah, if I'm around, I'll call in. Yeah, is that at IU or is that at Butler?
I believe it's at IU. Yeah.
Is that IU? Okay, then I won't be going. So I live downtown, so it's not very hard for me to get to a Butler game. But Bloomington's a little bit of a haul at $4 a gallon. Okay, guys, keep up the good work. I'll talk to you after the Butler game. See you guys.
All right. Definitely. All right. Well, unfortunately, Andy, you're still there, right?
Yeah.
Perfect. All right. Well, I think, unfortunately, the actual live broadcast cut out about 13 minutes ago, but I do believe that we are still recording for the archive version. So that's one of the eventually, as we get more listeners, we'll upgrade to the next level of Blog Talk Radio, which gives us 3 hours for these shows that go overtime. And I have a feeling that, you know, after Kentucky games, after Purdue games, we may have some shows where callers just keep calling, so we'll need to do that. But anyway, do you have any final thoughts on what our buddy Elwood had to say about Butler?
No, I do think it's interesting, although when I hear myself referring to, like, my generation, it makes me feel a lot older than I really am, so that was a little disappointing for myself. But, no, I mean, I do think it's interesting, and when you really think about, you know, some of those things, and even some of the things that, you know, Chronic Hoosier was talking about where, you know, I see things now where it's like, oh, there's X number of student tickets left for IU basketball. I just remember when I was there thinking, you know, A, there were never any left over, and you had to make sure that you got there in time to get them. And there were certainly years while I was there that weren't. I was there during, you know, kind of the Guyton era, if you will, and some of those guys. So the teams weren't terrible. They weren't ever, you know, they weren't ever great, but, you know, there was no way in the world that there were going to be unused student tickets. So to hear that now, I'm like, man, that's just amazing. So, you know, it does kind of give you some perspective on some of those things. I think some of what he said around, you know, the number of out-of-state folks and just the number of people who have, you know, grown up in an era where Indiana basketball was, you know, consistently among the top 25 and things like that is, you know, a little bit odd to think about that there's a generation of people that didn't happen for. So, that being said, it sounds like the 87 championship team are having some kind of reunion, it looked like, after for that Stetson game. So that should be interesting as well.
I think we all know what would be the most interesting part about that is if Coach Knight shows up. I think that's immediately the question that goes to your mind when they talk about a reunion, and they are. The 87 game, there's going to be a reunion at the Stetson game. It's a home game. There are still tickets available as far as, you know, these tweets are going. The big question would be if Coach Knight shows up. You know, and I was on campus. I was a freshman when Coach Knight got fired, and I grew up in Bloomington going to games. And, you know, look, there was a big difference after Coach Knight got fired. I mean, we had the big run to the championship game. But I think, you know, and as excited as we all were when we upset Duke and went to the championship game, there was a sense that, you know, before that was expected. You know, it was Coach Knight, and in 93 we were all disappointed when we lost in the Elite Eight to Kansas because we felt that was a championship team. And then in 02 it was more of a, we didn't expect this, this is surprising, it's awesome. You know, but there was still, after Knight got fired, that was the erosion started a little bit then. And we were able to keep it going with the players that Knight recruited, the players that Knight had coached that, you know, took us to that championship game. We know what happened with Mike Davis after those players left. We know what happened with He Who Shall Not Be Named. And obviously we know what's happened for the last 3 years. And so I think the fact that this new set of students, I use my brother as an example, he hears me talking about IU basketball all the time. He doesn't have the frame of reference I had. He didn't see every home game of Calvert Chaney. He didn't have, you know, IU teams to fall in love with that I do that have kept me going through these last 7 or 8 frustrating years since the championship years. And that's a long time. I mean, that's almost a full generation. So the fact that there is, you know, maybe a little bit of a lackadaisical attitude and Butler's evening up, hey, I think that's natural. And now the onus is on the Hoosiers to reassert themselves, and hopefully Crean's the guy to do that.
Yeah, I agree. It'll definitely be a big game. I think some of the, you know, the ego and some of those kinds of things that Chronic brought up are pretty interesting. It kind of gives an added layer to the game and, you know, something else to watch for. And, you know, I think it'll be the biggest test so far, although I think, you know, as we've talked about, I think offensively Butler's not as skilled and doesn't have the go-to players like it's had in the last couple of years. But, certainly they'll get after it defensively and it should be a good one.
Yeah. All right. Well, Andy, I appreciate it, man. I know you're on vacation and kind of hanging out, so I appreciate you taking the time. And we thank Ryan. He had to drop off the call a little while ago, but actually no one's listening live, so I don't, you know, I guess I can promote up. Well, people are listening to the archive version, so I will promote up the next show. As we talked about, there's almost a full week between now and then, but we play Butler next Sunday, the 27th. You know we will be here right after that game. That game actually starts at 6 o'clock Central Time, 7 o'clock Eastern. It's on the Big Ten Network. So we'll be here as soon as the buzzer sounds, ready to provide analysis. We'll see if we have any special guests. And, of course, we want your calls. But we appreciate everybody who's listened in. Andy, thank you for your time. And, again, I'm Jared Morris of Midwest Sports Fans. Andy Bottoms of the Bottoms Line. Ryan Phillips was with us earlier of RumorsAndRants.com. Our guest, Alex Bozich of InsideTheHall.com. I'm getting dyslexic with call and hall now because of how we named the show. I always get them mixed up now. Chronic Hoosier, of course, at Chronic Hoosier on Twitter. This is the Assembly Call post-game show. I'm Jared Morris, your host, and we appreciate everybody who joined in. We'll be back on the 27th for the Butler game. Go IU, and we will take you out, as we always do, with the fight song.